He is constantly on the verge of succumbing to the temptation to sit down with the Ayatollahs, just as he wanted to sit down with Kim Jong-un.
One man's inside view of the Trump administration shared with VOA. It's Monday, June 29th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're glad to have you with us. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the European Union seeks to halt Chinese and others from buying its companies. News media changes in Afghanistan. Differing views of the U.S. economy. A big U.N. milestone and a new Mars Explorer. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton has unleashed a scathing critique of President Donald Trump as an erratic leader. You may have also heard that he's publishing a book. We wanted to hear some more details about his perspective, including his perception that Trump was willing to undercut American security to improve his reelection prospects. That came during an interview with Voice of America. VOA's Brian Patton reports on Bolton's sweeping allegations of presidential misconduct, as well as White House responses slamming Bolton as a liar and a traitorous divulger of classified information.
During a Voice of America interview with Greta Van Susteren, John Bolton called President Trump dangerous and erratic and said the president is too willing to make detrimental concessions to American adversaries in order to boost his political standing.
He is constantly on the verge of succumbing to the temptation to sit down with the Ayatollahs, just as he wanted to sit down with Kim Jong-un.
Bolton, who served as Trump's national security advisor for 18 months, is seen by many in the foreign policy community as too extreme in his uncompromising advocacy for economic and military pressure to counter national security threats.
John Bolton's been largely wrong throughout his career in that we don't usually see even extremist regimes that are really forced into a corner completely capitulate.
Bolton left the White House in September after opposing the president's decisions to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to reach a peace deal with the Taliban in Afghanistan, and after Trump called off a military strike against Iran in retaliation for the downing of an American surveillance drone. Bolton later endorsed Trump's order in January to launch a drone strike that killed a top Iranian general after attacks by Iranian-backed groups in Iraq killed a U.S. contractor. In his new controversial memoir, The Room Where It Happened, Bolton accuses the president of compromising national security for his political benefit. He said Trump explicitly asked Chinese President Xi Jinping to buy U.S. agricultural products to help him win re-election. The president, he said, condoned Xi's plans to build prison camps for more than 1 million Muslim Uyghurs. Regarding the charges at the heart of President Trump's impeachment trial earlier this year, Bolton told VOA the president did improperly withhold military aid to Ukraine to press for damaging information on his Democratic political rivals.
The focus on the Ukraine had everything to do with damaging Trump's political opponents, both Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. It had nothing to do with the issue of corruption.
Bolton defended his refusal to testify during the impeachment, saying the trial became a highly partisan dispute. In the end, the Republican-led Senate cleared Trump of the charges. President Trump has called Bolton's book a compilation of lies and made-up stories, while at the same time accusing the former National Security Advisor of disclosing classified information. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, in a statement, denounced Bolton as a traitor for allegedly violating his sacred trust with the American people. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
As you can imagine, there is much more on this story on our website at voanews.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia, and we're on Facebook and Instagram at VOA Asia. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit our website, voanews.com. Thousands in western Myanmar flee as army plans operations, according to monitors. Bomb kills Afghan rights activists in Kabul. How Indonesia is setting limits for China's maritime expansion in Asia. Anti-racism protests spark conversations within Chinese immigrant families. India faces backlash over skin-lightening beauty products. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The European Union is moving to stop the purchase of strategic European companies by foreign subsidized corporations, especially from China. The European Commission has taken a first step by adopting a white paper on distortions that foreign subsidized companies are causing in Europe. We hear more in this report by Alfonso Beato in Barcelona, narrated by Jonathan Speer.
European leaders worry that financially distressed European companies could be snapped up at bargain prices by Chinese investors seeking to exploit the economic fallout caused by the coronavirus. The EU wants the power to impose conditions on outside subsidized investors or block deals altogether.
The single market is the key to European prosperity. But it only works if there is a level playing field. And for the Commission, it is a priority to protect that level playing field against the harm that foreign subsidies can do.
Chinese companies already have a major presence in Europe, having invested more than $180 billion in the last 20 years. The International Organization of Motor Vehicle Manufacturers ranks China the world's largest car manufacturer, surpassing the production of the EU, the US, and Japan combined. Chinese automakers are looking to invest more in Europe.
They are not only interested in the manufacturing of the complete automobile vehicles, they are also interested in accessing or seeking for a strategic asset.
Those assets include companies like Spain's Urbaser, which was bought by Firion Investments, a corporation controlled by a Chinese group that has public contracts in waste management. The EU is looking at ways to address the effects of foreign subsidies.
This is going to put the brakes on Chinese investments, since most Chinese companies that invest outside of China either have Chinese government participation or are wholly state-owned corporations.
The EU's main task at this moment is to come up with the right tools to prevent foreign subsidized corporations from having unfair advantages in the European market and preventing distortions in the wake of the pandemic. For Alfonso Beato in Barcelona, I'm John Speer, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. President Donald Trump said Sunday he had never been told about reports that a Russian military intelligence unit was secretly offering bounties to Taliban militants in Afghanistan to kill U.S. soldiers. Trump scoffed at a New York Times report that he had been briefed about it in late March. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's so good to start out a new week with you on VOA Asia. An outcry following a new draft amendment of Afghanistan's media laws has led the presidential palace to announce it will recall the draft until proposals are discussed further with the news media. Saron Rahim Gul reports.
Freedom of press in Afghanistan is a major achievement for Afghanistan and is considered unique in the region. Kabul drafted and endorsed its media laws almost 10 years ago. But a new draft of those media laws are coming under fire. Critics say they abolish the rights of new outlets to protect the identity of their sources and expands items banned from broadcast. It also shifts the authority to annual media license from courts to supervisory bodies. Journalists told VOA Afghan Service earlier this month they were worried the revised law will greatly limit media freedom. Those who oppose the draft law say it goes against four articles of Afghanistan's constitution. The Afghan Journalists Safety Committee are demanding that the proposed amendments be annulled.
In a highly sensitive time when we are getting into talks with Taliban, this media regulatory bill, which proposes limitations on press freedom, must stop. Otherwise, we will lose one of the major achievements of Afghanistan, freedom of press and freedom of speech.
Some journalists say the media bill will challenge the unique freedom journalists enjoy in the region.
The draft bill should not be sent to parliament. News outlets and media rights organizations were not consulted on the draft bill. The question is why this bill was proposed in this critical situation. Limitations have increased on the media. Afghan journalists are opposed to all limitations proposed in this draft law.
Absolutely, we support amendments in the law, but the issues highlighted here are very general. If we have suggestions and demands, they should be made in light of the current and upcoming situation in Afghanistan.
The media rights group NICE says the proposed draft law is in its early stages and that Afghan media have been and will continue to be involved in developing the amendments.
Our stand is that the new bill has been drafted in the presence of representatives of a number of media outlets. The process has been ongoing for almost a year. The draft is still not final.
However, the Ministry of Culture and Information says that no change has taken place in the media law and news outlets will be consulted.
Whatever amendment takes place in the mass media law will take place after the Ministry of Information and Culture's consultations with different types of media, news organizations and leading journalists.
The presidential spokesperson Sadiq Siddiqui says the president has seen a letter from journalists about their concerns and instructed staff to open a conversation with the media. The spokesperson said that the government is strongly committed to our free media and will remain so. In a cabinet meeting, President Ghani said the government is committed to supporting freedom of speech and enhancing media activities. The president added, "Fortunately, we have no one in custody on charges of violating freedom of speech." For Rahim Gulsarwan in Kabul, Afghanistan, Shaista Sadatlami, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Coronavirus has done little to slow China's big plans for a high-speed rail line linking its landlocked interior with the bustling ports of Singapore through mainland Southeast Asia. Work crews began laying track along the first 414-kilometer leg of the line through Laos in March. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. A new survey suggests the two main political parties in the United States, the Democrats and Republicans, have very different views on whether the U.S. economy has improved since being shut down this spring. This comes as the number of coronavirus cases is rising again in several states. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
In a new poll conducted by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, 85% of Democrats called economic conditions poor, while 65% of Republicans described them as good. As businesses start reopening, Peter Morici, a conservative economist and former U.S. International Trade Commission chief economist, believes the country is on the right track.
3 months into a crisis and unemployment is already starting to come down, that tells us that we're doing better than we thought.
The new survey shows about a third of Americans now describe the economy as good. It's a 7-point boost from the previous poll in May, but still a far cry from 67% of people with positive feelings on the economy in January. Dr. William Spriggs, a professor of economics at Howard University, thinks it's too early to start celebrating and fears more economic storms are on the horizon. He urges Congress to provide new aid beyond the existing relief package, which is set to expire next month.
That's why it's so important for Congress to right now reassure people by keeping the extra $600 a week for the unemployment insurance. It's really vital. And I think it's dawning on them because we're in the middle of June and people can see July 31st is right there and job prospects aren't popping up.
Some Americans who were laid off are now back at work, but more than a third of those facing some loss in household income told the pollsters they do not expect their jobs to return.
In the May jobs report, there was an additional 300,000 people that were permanently fired. Even though we gained 2.5 million jobs, those were largely people coming off of temporary layoffs.
On Thursday, the Department of Commerce reported the U.S. economy shrank at a 5% rate in the first quarter. White House economic advisor Larry Kudlow notes that there are no plans to shut down the economy again, despite a recent spike in COVID cases in several states.
We're going to have hotspots. No question. We have them now in, you know, Texas and parts of the South, the Carolinas, Arizona. We just have to live with that.
He says he thinks it's manageable. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Now on VOA Asia, the United Nations marked its founding in a much different world than it was born into. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir looks at whether the United Nations is still fit for purpose 75 years on.
Now my duty, my honor, and my privilege in the chair to call for a vote on the approval of the Charter of the United Nations.
It was June 1945 in San Francisco, California, that the UN Charter was signed. Created to prevent a repeat of the atrocities of World War II, the United Nations was designed as a framework to peacefully resolve international disputes. The organization marks its 75th anniversary in a much different world, one gripped by global upheaval, says UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
From COVID-19 to climate disruption, from racial injustice to rising inequalities, we are a world in turmoil. At the same time, we have an international community with an enduring vision embodied in the Charter to guide us to a better future. Our shared challenge is to rise to this moment.
But several of the UN's major founding powers, Britain, China, Russia, and the United States, are moving further away from one of its core principles, multilateralism. This, as smaller countries are embracing it.
We really see this move towards investing the UN with even more importance because these countries collectively acknowledge that many of the problems of our day cannot be solved except by multilateral diplomacy. Right? Things like climate change, things like global health, as we see too clearly today, can only be solved through international cooperation.
The UN chief acknowledges that today's multilateralism needs to be more robust.
The problem is not that multilateralism is not up to the challenges the world faces. The problem is that today's multilateralism lacks scale, ambition, and teeth.
Over the years, the UN has expanded its work to include peacekeeping and humanitarian operations. Today, the organization feeds 87 million people in 83 countries, vaccinates half the world's children, and has nearly 100,000 peacekeepers deployed in 13 countries. While preventing another world war, the UN has struggled to curb conflicts in nearly every corner of the globe, making the body ineffectual, say critics.
The UN isn't what it was conceived to be in 1945. It's been largely ineffective in its political arms. Many of its humanitarian agencies do very good work, but on the political side, it has not functioned as it was expected to.
The UN is marking its anniversary during the COVID-19 pandemic, a disease that poses perhaps its single greatest challenge since its founding. But before the virus, the UN was already facing a long to-do list.
I think the overwhelming challenge for the UN in the next decades will be
coordinating international responses to climate change.
Equally challenging, finding ways to balance power among its strongest members so they will continue to cooperate and not paralyze the organization's work.
The single greatest challenge to the UN is the rise of China, because China is gaining influence in the UN very rapidly as its economy grows. But that leaves American officials nervous, and it leaves diplomats from other countries worried that they are losing their positions and their influence in the UN system.
The organization, which has a multi-billion dollar annual budget, is also facing the worst fiscal crisis in its history.
The UN is incredibly cash-strapped right now. And that has real-world consequences. It has programmatic consequences. It has consequences for peace and security. It has consequences for things like global health, as we see today.
As the UN looks ahead, it will need the unity and political will of its 193 member states to successfully tackle the many problems the world faces. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, New York.
Scientists at NASA are planning another launch to Mars later this summer. The U.S. Space Agency says it will send to the surface a rover they described as a robot scientist. Part of that mission will also be NASA's first attempt at flight on the red planet. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us up to date on the latest in space news.
A test helicopter inside NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab at the California Institute of Technology shows it can fly in an environment built to mimic conditions on Mars. Hovard Grip is chief pilot for the Ingenuity Mars helicopter and one of the architects of the algorithms that give it autonomous flight.
Once we've proven that it's possible to fly a helicopter in this environment, that sets the stage for future missions where we can use helicopters in useful capacities, for example, for reconnaissance or for doing independent science.
Initial tests were shaky at best, with testers flying Ingenuity by remote control in a vacuum with carbon dioxide.
It was a success in one sense, in that it showed, yeah, it is possible to get off the ground with the helicopter, despite the thin atmosphere. But at the same time, it also showed us that we have to really focus intently on the control aspect of the helicopter, making sure that it's possible to handle a helicopter in this environment.
Scheduled for launch between July and August, Ingenuity joins a mission with Perseverance, the next generation rover to roam the red planet. NASA designed a $23 million toilet scheduled for September delivery to the International Space Station. It's a smaller design and should be more accommodating to female astronauts as well as future deep space missions. The space agency also announced a $20,000 Lunar Loo toilet building challenge running until August 17th. NASA seeks a toilet tailored to the moon's gravity, which differs from the microgravity in space. Finally, a partial solar eclipse called a ring of fire was visible from Hong Kong this week, with the moon covering close to 90% of the sun's diameter. Outside the Hong Kong Space Museum, stargazers with mostly makeshift eye protection turned up for the show.
I think it's incredible. I've never seen an eclipse in person like this before. I've only seen it live stream. But to see it in person, and some people lent me like glasses so I could look directly, the sun was really, really nice.
There has not been a ring of fire eclipse for at least a century, with the next one not until 2039, and the next after that in the year 2392. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. We encourage you to stop by and take a look. You can also find us on Twitter at VOA Asia and on Instagram and YouTube, also at VOA Asia. And our full-length programs can be found anytime you like at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us today. We thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Popeboom. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.